The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Tuesday, juggling nine plates in the air right now, trying to get everything done here so we can have a program and learn some more. And there's more to learn tonight. Dr. Henry Nyman is back with us tonight because this vaping crisis, and it really is a crisis. We don't know yet absolutely what's causing it. We have ideas. We're going to talk about those a little bit later tonight. It is something that is impacting and has maybe, and I'm not trying to scare you who vape, maybe has done permanent damage, certainly chronic damage, to maybe millions of vapers. We just don't know. Henry has been in the forefront of trying to pare this down to reality. We've been bringing you many programs on this subject, and we will continue to do so. In the meantime, again, and it's just for me, please, if you're vaping, unless you have a PhD in vapology, stop until we figure this out for you. You're not going to get much from your doctor or local health authorities, but we like to think that this audience cares, and you know we care. So please, if you're vaping, just hang it up for a while. You'll survive. Okay, Henry, welcome back. Thanks for being here, as always.
Well, it's good to be back, and you know, like you said, there's been a lot going on in the last 2 days or so, and this providing some additional evidence as to you know, who actually is at risk and some steps that are being taken to kind of get some resolution on how firm that data is, as well as what precisely is causing the lung injury. And I'll go over a little bit some of the arguments, those that are vaping, especially those that are vaping nicotine only, you know, feel very strongly that they're really two totally different camps. That there's nicotine only that's been around for, 10, 11 years. There really hasn't been a problem. They maintain there have been zero problems, actually. And that all of a sudden, things started up. A few months ago, the death started a few months ago, the cases maybe 3 or 4 months ago, and that it has to be something to do with some type of contaminant from street drugs. And and it's linked to THC. And so that they kind of view THC is just needlessly using vaping to take their THC and causing all these problems. And then they're worried about bans and not being able to get their nicotine. And part of the issue is whether, you know, who really is at risk. You know, the latest numbers are about a 90% overall of the cases do have some type of involvement with THC or CBDs, but, you know, something along the marijuana or marijuana derivative pathway. And then there's 10% of those cases that have essentially the same symptoms, saying that they didn't have any THC. And so the ones that are using it for nicotine just kind of wave their hand and say they're all lying. And that basically, and they give, I'll go through a whole litany of reasons why they're lying. You know, some are younger.
Yes,
they don't want their parents to know. Others are afraid they'll get in trouble with the law. Others are afraid that it'll get on their record somehow. But many of those don't really apply because, the interviews to find out what happened is really done anonymously and confidentially. So it's essentially a medical record. And you're no more at risk of having problems from that than, taking a test for cancer or buying a drug for diabetes. You know, there's there's a lot of things that kind of say, what your health is like. And so most people, especially if they're a little bit older, are going to try to be forthcoming because they want to know what's wrong with them. And if they don't tell the doctor how they got to where they are, they're going to, not be able to treat them very well. And especially as you said,
right.
There's the potential that it's a long-term problem. They, and if there is a difference, which I personally don't think there is, but if there is a difference between, getting the disease because of using nicotine versus getting the injury because of THC, the treatments may be different and the prognosis may be different. And so, there's a lot of reasons to kind of be fairly forthcoming because, the person asking the question and doing the interview wants to get honest answers. And there's, not any problem with giving assurances that it's a confidential information. It goes into your medical record. It's not something that's public. And so in any event, we can speculate as to what percentage of that 10% is lying. But there is other pieces of evidence that that discounts that and says that there is a subset of the cases that basically have the same symptoms because there's something in common between those that are vaping nicotine only and those that are, are vaping a THC product.
Go ahead. I got a question. All right. The MMWR came out again early from CDC. What's the latest from them? I don't know if they're actually, I don't think that they have the handle on it, at least in terms of the proportions of this crisis that we might hear on this program from time to time. They seem to be lagging a bit. I mean, they're trying. I'm not knocking them, but what's in the MMWR?
This one really has to do with cases in Utah and various state labs or investigators in that area have done studies on their patients to get an idea of what's going on locally, because it can be variation from location to location. And, you know, the first one of those types of studies came out with Illinois, Wisconsin. It was a combined study, and they had quite a few cases, and they described them initially, and then they actually did interviewing and did some urine testing. So that in that case, they had tested some of the deniers of using THC, and they tested negative on the urine test. So that's probably some of the strongest data that they were telling the truth. They said that, you know, they only smoked vape nicotine, and they had not done any vaping of THC, and then they tested their urine. Urine was negative, and it essentially confirmed what they had said. There was one, they only did it with four, and that they were negative for THC. They did it with more. They said they were positive, and the urine test confirmed the positive. So the urine test certainly worked. There was one that was positive, and he said that he hadn't vaped THC, but he had smoked marijuana, and that was the reason he would have THC in his urine. And then the fourth one, they didn't really say, you know, what the explanation was. I mean, you can come up with a bunch of reasons, and of course, he could have just been lying. But in any event, those were a couple examples of people that said they had only taken nicotine. They gave them a urine test, and the urine test was negative. So that's some of the strongest data from actual hard data that doesn't rely upon believing them. And there'll be more of those. You know, that's kind of an early study. That was some of the initial cases, and there'll be that type of verifications. In this case, it was. This group was in Utah, and they have a relatively high number also. They have like 98 cases now. I think in this MMWR, they had about 56, I think it might have been. And the main point of that was that they had an even higher percentage. They had like 94% of their cases had admitted that they used THC, and they did testing on that for vitamin E, and they found that the vast majority of those that were said they used THC not had vitamin E in their THC samples. And so that study was showing, you know, how high the percentage could be. It's a little above the average of 90%. They were up to 94%. They only had 6% that were nicotine only. And and they had a very high percentage. I think it was 80, 90% of the THC positives had the vitamin E acetate. But they said in the... They said they had these high numbers, but they still don't know exactly what's causing this, and they recommended that nobody vape, you know, not just don't vape. They said don't vape THC, and then they followed it with, and you should probably not use any e-cigarette products until they figure out exactly what's causing that. So they did this as an early release that came out.
Right.
Today it was embargoed. They didn't do a teleconference, and there wasn't that much fanfare. They didn't even issue a press release. They just sent out an email and said it was going to be in today's early release MMWR. So it will come out. It might come out Friday. So it'll probably be Friday. So Thursday night it'll be in the regular MMWR, and then it officially comes out on Friday. So that was, one piece of news that wasn't that exciting. Well, the reason why it wasn't that exciting is the individual states are getting a little better at giving more information out. And most of the states, at a minimum, update their website once a week. and they're starting to break down some of this information. So pretty much all the information in the MMWR, at least summary-wise in a table, you could have gone to the Utah webpage in the Department of Health and got the exact same tables.
Yeah.
Actually, if you went there, you'd have an update on it because they, like I say, in the MMWR, there were 56 cases. Now there's 98. And they get the numbers, how much were THC and how many had vitamin E acetate. So that was a quick little update. Another update, which actually was more of an update for me than it was the data, is data that came out from the Mayo Clinic in the New England Journal of Medicine. And
Henry, hold on. I need you to, I've been looking for 15 minutes for that email from that lady that I sent you. And can you send that to me?
Yeah.
I cannot find it. I've been through every damn file I have here. This is what I'm referring to, and all of you who are vaping or know anybody who does, this is really important. And as soon as I get it, I'm going to read it. And I'm going to pause between paragraphs and have Henry elaborate and elucidate on the points made. This may be one of the most important breakthroughs we've had, and I do want to give this woman credit for sending it in. I just as soon as Henry can send it over to me, I'll do that. Yeah, go ahead, take your time. We have. By the way, Texas today became the leader, what an honor, in terms of the number of vaping damage and injury cases so far in the U.S. Texas's numbers have increased from 119 total to 147, and they now lead the nation. There was another story. Did you find it?
Yeah, so I just sent it, so you should have it.
All right. There's another story up. As soon as I can get the news headlines posted, I'm always trying to add to them, even when we're on the air. There's a brand out there of CBD vapes called YOLO. YOLO, Y-O-L-O. I think it's a county in California. And the story is YOLO brand.
No, YOLO is you only live once.
Is that it? Well,
yeah.
There is a YOLO county, too. All right. Well,
there is a YOLO county, but they're actually within a mile of where I used to live. So they're right outside of La Costa in Carlsbad, California. That's where they
got
are.
It. All right. So, this is a brand of CBD vapes called YOLO. And the story is claiming it's from L-E-F-L-Y, Leafly.com. They're claiming that YOLO brand CBD vapes sickened consumers with K2 and spice. Now, I put a question mark after that because I don't have the data and I don't have the proof. It's a news story, so you make of it what you will. There's just a lot going on with this. Many doctors around the country believe it. They're still studying this issue of ground glass opacity. It's not ground glass. Don't get that idea. It's the appearance of ground glass in an opaque sense that is imaged with a CAT scan. And that seems to be a hallmark of lung damage that people are suffering, this ground glass appearance and the opacity of it. Okay, I got it, Henry.
Right.
Thank you. Go ahead and tell me a little bit more about that. Fill our listeners in, then we'll start reading this letter.
Okay. Well, the one update that I kind of discovered today was, if you recall, there have been two studies. There was the Mayo Clinic one in the New England Journal of Medicine, and then there was the Cleveland Clinic one that was more recently in the American Journal of Pathologist or something along the line, but it was the Pathology Journal. And the one of the authors from Cleveland Clinic actually did a video and kind of went through the data and so the slide presentation, and he showed all the biopsies and the radiological features, and it was kind of, I thought it was very well done, and it kind of, you know, confirmed what I had, how I had kind of summarized it, that they were really confirming the, you know, they were coming to the same conclusions, and those conclusions really indicated that the injuries to the lungs of these cases were those that you would find in chemical burn injuries, you know, like mustard gas or various types of chemical injuries. And they really didn't see the lipoid pneumonia, and that had been kind of bandied about before the New England Journal of Medicine and before this American Journal of Pathology. And so since he said that, I thought I would go back and look at the New England Journal of Medicine. And I went and I looked at the supplement, and I really should have looked at the supplement a couple of weeks ago. But in any event, the supplement had all seven, there were 17 cases in the first study, and it had the demographics and the clinical picture on all 17 of them. And it was really quite detailed. And I did post that and went through the numbers. And what was interesting was, two of those cases were really very early. They were really from 2016 and 2017. And so these cases had not really been identified as being, you know, part of this lung injury series. And they found them by simply searching the Mayo Clinic database, the clinical database for the word vaping, and they came up with these two cases. And what was interesting about them was both of them were smokers. One was 44, the other was 42. They were both male. And they had both stopped smoking and turned to vaping. One had been vaping for 2 years, the other had been vaping for 1 year. And they had indicated that 12 of the 17 cases they were looking at, you know, had indicated they involve THC or some CBD or some cannabis, and these two did not. And so they were kind of your typical nicotine only cases, where they were smokers, they switched to vaping to stop smoking, and they came in with the same symptoms as the current wave of cases. And
Yeah, hold on a second.
Take a break?
Yeah, we're going to take our break. We'll come right back, and then I'm going to get into this statement. 39-year smoker, now an ex-smoker for 5 years. She's a vaping advocate, and she says that nicotine has nothing to do with the injuries. Now, stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right. Henry, if you want to wrap that up, you were making a statement, then we'll jump into this other thing, which is very interesting and very important. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, just to finish up the New England Journal, so the two cases that were done, I mean, all the other cases were 2019. So these two basically came in long before anybody knew there was this injury associated with vaping. And so they would be a couple examples, assuming that they didn't take THC, and they didn't indicate that they did. They weren't, you know, designated any of these, you know, a vaping injury because nobody was really tying that to any type of vaping at the time. And so these would be a couple examples of cases that could have happened earlier, but they're not reported, and that's part of the reason those that just do nicotine can say, You know, there are zero examples of it before the last few months ago. And then the other thing that you could get out of this study was that two of the patients died. And one of them they identified as a 34-year-old female. She also is among the 12 that said that she took THC, but I think she died fairly quickly, and I don't think they got too much information. But I'm pretty sure that this death actually was the first death in Florida, because this study used all male clinics, but 11 patients came from Arizona, 5 from Minnesota, and 1 from Florida. And Arizona hasn't reported any deaths yet. And Minnesota's had 3, but 2 of them were over 50 and 1 was over 65. And therefore, the only other patient would be the one from Florida. And Florida has had 1 death, which has been very little information. So I think that that's who the Florida death was. But the other death, they didn't really identify. But like I said, going through where they were got them, this was, seems to have been a Minnesota case if the other death was in Florida. And the first Minnesota death actually was 65. And so it's likely that this was the other death. And this was another smoker who actually hadn't even stopped smoking. He was doing both smoking as well as vaping. And that was the second death. So the three that you have a pretty good idea that they definitely weren't taking THC, and they definitely were former smokers that was vaping to get off. They include 2 that were very early and 1 that had died. So they're among the most interesting of the 17 that are there. And the point is that all 17 had the same diagnosis as far as what they look like under the okay. microscope. They all had the chemical right. burns, and they didn't have any lymphoid pneumonia.
All right. Let's jump into this. This is very important. The heck, I cannot. Unfortunately, the woman's name is obscured. What's her name? Oh, here it is. Andrea Duncan. So thank you, Andrea, for posting this. We picked it up. This is an advocate speaking, this lady. She's very much pro vaping and obviously has done her homework. Now, I'm not saying she has the answer or all the answers, but she sure as hell has some very good information. So let's go through this, and there are 5 paragraphs. They're not very long. I'm going to read them. We'll read the first one, and we'll get Henry to comment.
But read the question, just to give you an idea. This is called Quora Digest, and people write in with questions, and then they have different experts right. in the area.
Her first statement is the question. Is that what you're talking about?
That wasn't her. Somebody that had subscribed to it. So that was the question that was submitted to her, to Cora Digest, and she answered it. But,
okay.
I mean, you want to read the question? The question is important. That's what got my attention.
It's probably the style of your vaping, right?
I'll read the question because I got it in front of me.
Read the question.
The question was, why do my lungs ache after vaping?
Yes. Okay.
Is the nicotine strength too high? So that was
correct.
The question that
that's
Andrea
the general question
was,
on Quora.
Was answering.
Right. Why do my lungs sure. ache after vaping? Is the nicotine strength too high? And this lady, Andrea Duncan, wrote the following response.
And just to clarify, she's a former smoker and she's a vaping advocate. So
39 years she smoked. She quit
and 5 years
vaping, ago
right.
and has been vaping. All right, here's her answer. It's probably the style of your vaping and the high VG of your e-liquid. When you hit your vape, do you do it as you would with a cigarette? First into your mouth, then into your lungs? Or do you simply huff it straight deeply into your lungs right off the bat, so that you can then exhale some humongous cloud that looks more like whipped cream than vapor. That's the first statement of her response. Now, let's go ahead and do this. What's the difference? Smokers take it in their mouth and in their lungs, and huffing is straight in.
Right. And so give a little bit more of a description. But if you think about that, they can have different effects on your lungs, and she's going to talk about that a little bit. And it could also even have to do with what the temperature is by the time it hits your lungs. And if it's in your mouth, it's going to cool off a little bit more than if it's going to go directly into your lungs.
And this is fascinating.
Like a cigarette smoker.
Yeah. When you smoke a cigarette, it takes on a different form. Vaping as little micro droplets of liquid. Cigarette smoke is not that. Those are microscopic solids when you smoke a cigarette, not liquid droplets. Different form, okay? All right, here's the rest of her answer. I'll read the first part again, and we'll go to the second graph right away. She says, it's probably the style of your vaping and the high VG, those are capital V, capital Gs, of your liquid. When you hit your vape, do you do it as you would with a cigarette? First into your mouth, then into your lungs. Or do you simply huff it deeply into your lungs right off the bat so that you can then exhale some humongous cloud that looks more like whipped cream than vapor? Our second graph. The first style is called mouth to lung and is the most like smoking. The second style is called direct to lung and bears no resemblance to smoking a cigarette, but is a great deal like smoking pot or huffing chemicals out of a paper bag. For some inexplicable reason, this has become the leading fad in vaping. And also those ridiculous clouds, which are nothing like exhaled cigarette smoke. Those ridiculous clouds are because of high VG in the mix, at least 50% of the mix being VG. Okay, Henry?
Right. Okay, so VG is the vegetable glycerol, and that is basically the type of base that is used for THC. It is it's polar, but it's much more soluble for something like THC, which is hydrophobic, than the PG, which is polyethylene polyglycerol. So the PG.
PG is polyglycerol. Yeah.
Right. And so that is what is more common to be used with nicotine, because nicotine is not hydrophobic. So the PG is more polar, THC won't really solubilize very well in the PG, but it does much better in the VG. Now, the VG is kind of thicker, and that's part of the reason it gets cut with a vitamin E acetate. So that kind of thins it out a little bit. It saves them money. And some people don't like it quite that thick. But the thicker VG, generally, you have to turn the temperature up. So you're vaping at a higher temperature if you're doing VG, and you can get different combinations of it, which she'll go into. But the THC users are going to have a higher VG, and they might have VG cut with the vitamin E acetate, but vitamin
Maybe
E
not.
Acetate has a fairly high boiling point. So either way, you have to pretty much heat it up to a higher temperature than you would for the PG. So the PAC users are generally going to be going to a higher temperature. But
because of the high volume of VG in the mixture. And,
right.
And again,
so,
to quote her, she says...
So the THC is solubilized. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And again, she says, those ridiculous clouds are because of high VG in the mix, at least 50% VG, vegetable glycerol.
Right.
And she continues.
She says it's become a leading fad in vaping.
Right. She
So,
yeah.
you see those pictures all the time on these articles with all this smoke coming out of
like they're trying to be Puff the Magic fire-breathing dragon. I think it's a show-off thing, frankly.
All right. It is what ends up in their lungs. It doesn't all just go out like that.
Absolutely.
They also
thick, heavy with 50% at least VG, heavier... Into the lungs? No. All right. She continues. Although sensitivity to PG's drying, irritating effects is far more common, it is not at all uncommon for some people to be unable to huff that much VG, at least 50% VG. It's very thick stuff. And when it condenses onto the surfaces of your airways, it reduces the available airspace and can even cause pain. Remember the original question. Though a sensation of thickness, heaviness, or shortness of breath is more common. For me, if I vape more than 14% VG, I feel like I have a hairball on my chest that I can't cough up no matter how hard I try. So I vape 86% PG and only 14% VG, vegetable glycerol. And that's commonly available 50% or more in these mixes. To repeat again, although sensitivity to PG's drying, irritating effects is far more common, it is not at all uncommon for some people to be unable to huff that much VG. It's very thick stuff, and when it condenses onto the surfaces of your airways, it reduces the available airspace and can even cause pain, though a sensation of thickness, heaviness, or shortness of breath is more common. For me, if I vape more than 14% VG, I feel like I have a hairball in my chest that I can't cough up no matter how hard I try. So I vape 86% PG and only 14% VG. All right, Henry.
Well, just as a reminder, this whole answer has nothing to do with THC. This entire answer is how to vape nicotine. So they're talking about using PG and a certain a high percentage of the PG, and that's not even used for the THC. The THC is using VG. And if they're cutting it, they're not cutting it with PG. They're cutting it with vitamin E acetate. So it's a totally different animal that is something that's...
Right.
And they don't call it. They don't call it e-juice. They call it oils because it's more of an oily type of a base because it's mostly VG and it doesn't have the PG. So she's talking about how the whatever percent she was talking about was you can't get above 70% or
86% PG, 14% VG is what she vapes.
That's what she's doing, but she's saying that the 70-30 is the highest available PG available. And so
she must be making her own.
Well, I think there are combinations that you can get it. You can get it at those different ratios. But she's only talking about nicotine. She wasn't asked about THC, and you know, she might not really have any experience with THC.
Who switched?
Who basically was a former smoker and now is taking nicotine to get off cigarettes.
All right. Once again, her preferred ratio is 86% PG, 14% VG. And the question is, why do my lungs ache after vaping? Is it the nicotine strength being too high? Here's her next paragraph. If you vape e-liquid, which is at least 70% PG, and don't huff it straight into your lungs will probably stop bothering you. It's possible you might need to go even more into the archaic original style of vaping, as I've always had to do, with an even higher percentage of PG. But if so, then you'll have to make your own e-liquid. As far as I know, 70-30 is the highest level of PG available. 70% PG, 30% VG. In commercial e-juice, 70-30 is common. So she is making her own. That's the inference here. And let me finish it up here. And just so you know, it's not necessary, this is key, to inhale directly into your lungs at all. This is nicotine now, as vaporized nicotine is in liquid droplets, not the microscopic solids of cigarette smoke that absorb best in the deep alveoli. Liquid droplet vaporized nicotine absorbs best in the mucosa of the mouth, throat, nose, and sinuses. So what she's saying here is, take the nicotine in your mouth and blow it out your nose. It's going to go right into the mucosa of your mouth and throat and nose, no problem. You don't need to huff nicotine into your lungs. She says it's a hard habit to break when you've been a smoker for a while, but inhaling into your lungs is the least effective means of absorbing vaporized nicotine. You don't have to take it into your lungs if we're talking nicotine here. Just into your mouth, your throat, out your nose. That's all you have to do, because the micro droplets will go right into the mucosa and work their way into the bloodstream. These are micro liquid droplets. You don't want to be pulling them down into your lungs like you do with microscopic solids from cigarette smoke. You don't need to. So there's a plus there with vaping. You can just keep it in your mouth, basically, and get rid of it. It's a very interesting observation here, Henry, to me. And I'm not a smoker or a vapor.
Right. So, I mean, the take-home message is that there are some major differences between the THC and the nicotine. This is, you know, the base that is in. These are called e-liquids.
Right.
And the others are called oils because they're much thicker and they have to be heated to a higher temperature. And so that's one of the big differences just in the style, not what it's cut with and whether it's bought on the street or whether it's bought from a licensed store. That the THC is just more of an oil than a liquid, and or a juice, and it generally is taken to a higher temperature. And so that is one possibility that is being investigated. There was an NPR story today that kind of talked about what the CDC and FDA are doing. And the CDC is going to be looking at the lung tissue of patients, you know, biopsy tissue, and look for the chemicals that are in the lungs. And then the FDA is going to take devices and go ahead and make vape and then look at the chemicals that are in the vape. So if indeed there's heavy metals that are coming from the solder or from the platings,
cadmium,
and they're going into the vape, the FDA is going to see those heavy metals. And if those heavy metals are actually going into the patient's lungs, CDC should be able to pick those heavy metals up.
And that would be THC and nicotine.
Well, but it's probably going to be somewhat temperature dependent. So,
right.
So if you're taking THC, you're probably going to a higher temperature, and it'll be easier to pull those heavy metals out into the vape than it would at a lower temperature. So that could explain what the difference is, even if you're using kind of the same devices, because one, the temperature is higher for the THC and more likely to get contaminants from the device than the nicotine. And that might also be influenced by who's actually doing the vaping. Because these people, the ones that are most vocal about the nicotine are generally people that are trying to get off smoking. They're an older population, and they've never even thought about doing THC. So, like, this is written, they never mentioned THC. They never mentioned, higher percentages of VG. They always talk about the lower ones. And, she goes all the way down to only having 14% VG. So it's almost all PG that she's using. So the difference in the one being hydrophobic and being in an oil versus one being hydrophilic and being in a water-soluble base affects how high the temperature is, which could affect what comes out of the device and into the vape. So these new studies that are actually just beginning could provide some insight as to what's actually in the vape. And they do mention that the temperature can change what's in the vape. So I think they're on the right track as far as what they're doing devices-wise. And it may be that simple. It is a temperature issue. The two different groups use different temperatures, and you see it at a low frequency in the nicotine users, and you see it at a high frequency in the THC users. Although that doesn't mean that over time the nicotine doesn't catch up. It just takes longer for them to get this disease than the.
All right, Henry. Hold on. Can you stay over for a little bit? I want to go through some of this again. Then I have some more questions that I want to get put on the table. If you can hang on, we'll take our top of the hour break and come right back and continue. I'm going to go through this statement again for all of you out there who are former smokers and using vaping and only nicotine to try to get some relief. And remember that the original question someone wrote into the Quora, Quora.com site, why do my lungs ache after vaping? Is the nicotine strength too high? We're going to come back with more, so stay tuned. We'll be with you right after this. Okay. Now, Frosty will be on in a half an hour, but I've asked Henry to stay over, and I appreciate Frosty holding off. We'll spend more time with Frosty tonight anyhow. But this is really, a very important issue. Just quickly, Henry, before I go into this again, the breakdown in vapors, 70% nicotine, 20%, was it 30% or 71% nicotine, and allegedly 29% THC. Was that the breakdown? Do I remember correctly?
No, it's the other way around. And that was just okay. In the New England Journal of Medicine. The overall is about 90-10 now. So it's 90% THC, 10% nicotine. So the vast majority of the cases that are in the hospital are THC patients.
All right. Now, do THC vapors use this at least 50% VG? What is the VG percentage that we usually will see with THC use?
I think it's very high. I'm not sure if it's got any PG in it. And 47% of the samples that have been tested do have the vitamin E acetate. So instead of cutting VG with PG, they cut VG with vitamin E. And
define VG again for us. It's vegetable glycerol,
right?
Okay,
and so it's more, the THC is more soluble in VG. VG has got kind of a lipid-like backbone, so it's soluble, but it's much better for THC.
So that 71-29 was just that one sample group. Okay. I got it.
That was from the New England Journal of Medicine. So they had, there were 12 that were THC or CBD and 5 that did not acknowledge that they had THC anyway.
All right. When she says the average commercially, she said the highest level of PG available in commercial e-juice, nicotine, is 70%. And what you're saying, that's PG. And what you're saying is that in THC use, there's very little and sometimes zero PG.
Right.
It's all VG.
Right. Because the PG is polar and is, oil and vinegar kind of thing. The THC is hydrophobic. It doesn't like water. So it doesn't like going into PG. It'll separate from the PG. It won't dissolve in the PG. It'll dissolve in the VG. And it'll dissolve in VG plus vitamin E acetate. That's also hydrophobic.
Uh-huh.
And that's why they call it oils. They don't call it, e-liquid, or e-juice. They call it, an oil. So that's what the big difference is. An oil, it has a higher boiling point, and so they heat it up to a higher temperature. And if they're going to be pulling any heavy metals off the device, those heavy metals are going to come off the device much more easily at a higher temperature. So at a higher temperature or prolonged use at a higher temperature, maybe you have to use the device for several months or several years, and it'll basically have some metal fatigue and low heavy metals will come off, and the symptoms of heavy metals is similar to the symptoms that these patients have.
All right.
So there is that.
Okay. What I would like to do, keeping in mind that this is, as Henry said, it's approximately 90% THC use, 10% nicotine. This letter is for nicotine vapors, but I want to read it anyhow because it's very instructive. It opens several doors for THC people to think about. So I'm just go through this again. She writes regarding the question again, which was, let me do the question. Why do my lungs ache after vaping? Is the nicotine strength too high? Okay. And this name, again, is Andrea Duncan. I want to give her credit. Smoked for 39 years. She quit 5 years ago and has been vaping nicotine for 5 years. She says, in answer to the question, why do my lungs hurt? It's probably the style of your vaping and the high VG, vegetable glycerol, in your e-liquid. When you hit your vape, do you do it as you would with a cigarette, first into your mouth, then into your lungs? Or do you simply huff it straight deep into your lungs right off the bat, so that you can then exhale some humongous cloud that looks more like whipped cream than vapor? The first style is called mouth to lung and is the most like smoking. The second style is called direct to lung and bears no resemblance to smoking a cigarette, but is a great deal like smoking pot or huffing chemicals out of a paper bag. For some inexplicable reason, this has become the leading fad in vaping, huffing, and also those ridiculous clouds, which are nothing like exhaled cigarette smoke. Those clouds are because of high VG, vegetable glycerol, in the mixture, at least 50% VG. Although sensitivity to PG's drying, now PG's the other one, PG's drying irritating effects is far more common, it is not at all uncommon for some people to be unable to huff that much VG, 50% or more. It's very thick stuff, and when it condenses onto the surfaces of your airways, it reduces the available airspace and can even cause pain, though a sensation of thickness, heaviness, or shortness of breath is more common. For me, if I vape more than 14% VG, vegetable glycerol, I feel like I have a hairball on my chest that I cannot cough up, no matter how hard I try. So I vape a mixture, 86% PG, 14% VG. If you vape e-liquid, which is at least 70% PG, and that's very common, and don't huff it straight into your lungs will probably stop bothering you. It's possible you might need to go even more into the archaic original style of vaping, as I've always had to do, with an even higher percentage of PG. But if so, then you'll have to make your own e-liquid. As far as I know, 70-30 is the highest level of PG available in commercial e-juice, 70% PG, 30% VG. And just so you know, it's not necessary to inhale into your lungs at all. Now, this has to do, remember, with nicotine, as vaporized nicotine is in liquid droplets, not in the microscopic solids of cigarette smoke that absorb best in the deep alveoli in your lungs. Liquid droplet, vaporized nicotine absorbs best in the mucosa of the mouth, throat, nose, and sinuses. So you really don't even have to pull it into your lungs. It's a hard habit to break when you've been a smoker for a while, but inhaling into your lungs is the least effective means of absorbing vaporized nicotine. And I hope that helps all of you who are doing this. Henry, go ahead.
Well, it kind of shows what these dramatic differences are between those that are taking THC and those that are taking nicotine. And, as an aside, the group that falls into the highest category, which is 60%, do both. So 60% of the cases that are in the hospital, they, in the last, whatever, 3 months or so, they have had both nicotine as well as THC. So they're doing both of these. And I could imagine that for others that are just doing THC, they could get confused at what temperature they're supposed to be. Those that are just doing nicotine, they could get confused and they might take it up to a higher temperature. And so they're at a temperature because their friends that are doing THC are at this higher temperature, and they don't realize that for the nicotine, they can do it at a much lower temperature. And it's the same thing, the people that have quit smoking, you know, and are just taking nicotine, they go and say, well, I would never go up to these higher temperatures. Why do they need to do that? So it's kind of two different worlds, and they're kind of viewing this totally from different points of view. And the nicotine group is saying, this is fine. There hasn't been any problems with this. And at the lower temperatures, there very well may be fewer problems. And for those that happen to take it at a higher temperature, they go and they get into trouble. They're not the majority of the ones that are in trouble, but the cases that are being seen now are all relatively short. Most of these people have been vaping for 1 to 3 years. And so what the long-term effects of vaping THC over a, a 5 or 10 year period is not that well known. And these numbers could go up very dramatically. I mean, we're going to find out in the not too distant future because the deaths so far this week seem to be down. I haven't seen a report yet of a death this week. They usually come out on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, so they could make up for it tomorrow and on Thursday, and this week may be similar to previous weeks. The number of cases, you know, that jump in Texas was pretty significant. They were up like 28. They do it weekly, so that was 28 new cases. And frankly, they're number one today. Illinois will probably take the lead back as soon as they report this week. They're only 10 behind them. They're at 137. And so the chances are they'll go above 150 when they report this week. And California and New York kind of are uneven. They're not, neither of them, one's 135, one's 128. They haven't reported yet this week. Well, California did an update, but I'm not sure. It was only like 3 cases, and I have a feeling that that's just kind of trickling in, and those numbers are going to go higher. But in any event, the number of cases seems to be pretty steady, and it's been running at around 275 or so each week. And the number of deaths had been going up. It was 7 last week. That was the first drop. The week before it was 8. And those are the two highest weeks. And whether it's going to get up there again this week, I don't know. But the you know, the complication is the flu season. The flu season is getting ready to kick into gear, and it's supposed to be a fairly severe flu season. And then that's going to create all kind of havoc. Because number one, the diagnosis is going to get confused because the symptoms are fairly similar between the flu and the vaping. And so somebody might actually have the flu and take a flu test and be positive. And they figure, you know, just rest or take Tamiflu or something, and you'll be fine. And then they send them home, and then they could very well have both. And the flu could exacerbate the condition of their damaged lungs, and they could, seriously deteriorate. And others that even aren't vaping, if they stop because they heard all the news, they could still be in trouble because their lungs haven't recovered, and then they get a viral infection thrown on top of that, and the lungs will be much more susceptible to further injury if they're already damaged and have not repaired. And exactly how long it takes to repair is still a little bit unclear. You know, whether the how long-lasting these effects are. But a lot of the patients that have been discharged are, you know, healthy enough to leave the hospital and get off an ECMO machine so they can breathe on their own, but they still have trouble going upstairs, and they still don't have the energy level they have or the stamina they had and how long it takes for that to come back, I don't really know. I think most people don't know for sure. This is a fairly new phenomenon. So that's kind of where things stand. The data that the FDA and CDC are going to get by looking at what's in the vape and what's in the lungs might be able to more pinpoint the cause. I mean, the problem right now is there's no one thing that's in common as far as additives. I mean, there's one issue with street drugs, but it's not really clear that the street drugs are the contaminants are the cause. I mean, it was widely assumed that the vitamin E acetate was really the cause of the injury. But it was really thought that it was involved with the lipoid pneumonia. And the two studies that looked at the biopsy said they didn't see any lipoid pneumonia. They just saw a chemical injury. So, I mean, vitamin E acetate is commonly used in skin creams. It's not like it's a new compound that nobody's ever heard of or somebody's cooking up in their basement. You can buy vitamin acetate and various skin creams, or you can get an industrial strength and buy it by the gallon or barrel, and it is a lot cheaper. So you can not only cut the viscosity of the VG, but you can also cut the cost of the oil. And that part of the reason it's there, but it's only in 47% of the cases, the samples anyway. So more than half of the samples do not have vitamin E acetate. So, even if there is some indication that it does some harm and contributes to the lung injury, it wouldn't really explain what happens to the 53% that don't have the vitamin E acetate. So there hasn't been one thing that's been nailed down. I mean, what is in common is that they all vape, and the THC are going to vape at higher temperatures, but they aren't necessarily all going to be lower for the nicotine. And you can have newer users that basically go to this higher temperature, or alternatively, their lungs are already damaged enough from smoking that they switch over, and then they start getting into trouble. And previously, they could have been easily missed. I mean, these first two cases that were in the New England Journal study, they were hospitalized in 2016 and 2017. And the only reason the current researchers knew about them is they basically did a search of the database and said, in the intake or whatever, that they had vape cigarettes. And so it was in their chart. And then they found them, and then they looked at their biopsies, and they looked like all the rest. They got the same ground glass opacity, and they got the same types of features that they had in that were consistent with a chemical burn.
Yeah. So, Henry, you there's an interesting little sidebar to this. Henry gets response from, we have just 3 minutes left. You get response from vapors to some of your posts and so forth. You get some hostility. Some of these people don't want to hear it, do they?
No, they're, well, I mean, the way they view it is that they've never had a problem, and all of a sudden they've got these younger kids that are out vaping THC because they want to get high, and now their parents and others that don't vape just want to ban all the vaping, and they don't even like calling the THC vaping. They say vaping is just nicotine. These guys are doing something totally different. And in one sense, they are, because it's more like an oil than a juice, and it's a thicker, and it's and it's at a higher temperature, and it is somewhat different. But the data kind of suggests that it's not exclusively the THC, and so, you know, they say there have been zero cases, so they wouldn't count these two. I mean, these two, they would come back and say, well, you know, they were smokers who basically stopped smoking and they started vaping nicotine. But how do you know they didn't take THC? You have to do a urine test. And so this study, New England Journal, they did do urine tests. So they say that doesn't prove it. Then you go and take the ones that did take a urine test, and they were negative for THC, and they say, well, maybe they didn't know, maybe there wasn't any THC in there, that they were taking some other street drug in there, and they thought it was THC, and so their urine's negative, but it wasn't that they were smoking nicotine, they were smoking some other street contaminant, and that's what caused it. And so they'll use those kind of arguments, and they'll stick and say, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. We've been doing this for 10 years. Go away.
Famous last words.
That are positive, they don't like that.
Famous last words. Let's hope not. Henry, thank you. I think this is a very important program, and I think it does shine a light into some dark areas, which is, I was very grateful to see it. So, thank you.
Okay, well, I mean, there's testing going on. I think it'll get resolved in not the too distant future. At least what causes it, as far as solving the problem of who's vaping. And whether
very
they
good.
Believe it or not, that's a totally different one. Okay,
indeed.
Good talking.
Thanks.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Night. All right, Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD. All right, we will be right back with Frosty coming up next.